Welcome, everyone, to the Wolken English Podcast. This is your host. My name is Gabriel, and I'm joined today once again by Guy from the UK. Emma, friend, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. I had a magnificent weekend apart from the Super Classico, which we will discuss a little bit later on in today's episode. It's a nice Monday out here in New York. There's beautiful. It's starting to get a little chilly. I love the fall. I love the winter. So it's going good so far. It's an exciting week that we have had, especially with Thursday's match. How was your weekend? Good?
Yes, it was good. Shout out to the guys at Boca Londres in our consulado, our group. We got together and watched the Superclásico. Unfortunately, we lost, but it was good to get about 20 people there. That was really good fun. That's to watch awesome. It all together.
That's awesome. Yeah. When's the last time I joined a consulado? I think it was the New York consulado, which is a fairly new one. We went to the ground in New York City, Lower East Side of Manhattan. I don't know if you've ever heard of that building, but essentially they have it's owned by a couple of British guys, if I'm not mistaken. They have a pitch inside. A 5-on-5 pitch inside, and on the rooftop. You could actually search it up on Google Maps and you could see the pitch that's on the rooftop of the building. It's really, really nice. But anyways, I went to go see a Super Clásico there April of last year, if I'm not mistaken. It was a 1-0 win at the Monumental with Villa's ridiculous goal. River completely outplayed us, and then González Pires makes that mistake at the back. Villa takes advantage and scores, and we run out 1-0 winners. But anyways, there was a good amount of people there. There was like 40, 50, 60 people there. It was ridiculous. But that's the one and only game I saw at the Consulado. It's a little bit of a hike for me from where I live. It's about 2.5 hour drive with traffic, obviously. New York traffic is brutal, but the Consulados are fun. Anyways, so we're going to break down this podcast, I guess, in three sections. We're going to discuss the match against Palmeiras on Thursday night, the Superclásico. Sunday morning, and then we're going to sort of preview fairly quickly the second leg against Palmeiras in Brazil. So 0-0, full-time score at La Bombonera. I was happy and upset for two different reasons, right? I was happy with the game, the way we went out and played, our approach to the game. I think going into it, and we discussed this last week, Guy, you brought up the interview that you did with a couple of guys from the UK who had also interviewed a Brazilian journalist, and the Brazilian journalist was fairly, we spoke about this in the chat, right? The Brazilian journalist was fairly confident that Boca had zero chance of winning the tie. Palmeiras is the overall favorite. And I think looking at how the game went about, we were far superior than Palmeiras, I would say, almost the entire match. I was pretty surprised. Again, going into it, Palmeiras was the heavy favorite in the 180 minutes, right? Palmeiras is, apart from Flamengo winning the Copa Libertadores last year, before that, they're the two-time defending champion. They're arguably the best team in Brazil in the past 5 years or so, 4 years or so. They have an incredible coach, incredible players. Their academy is ridiculous. They have this kid, Hendrick, who I think is already on his way to Real Madrid in a couple years. So they have a very, very solid team from the back all the way up. And we outplayed them completely. Let me begin with the lineup, Almirón's lineup. We went with Chiquito Romero in goal, obviously. Advíncula, Figal, Rojo, Fabra, which I think was both of our defense when we previewed last week, Guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Medina, Paul Fernandez, Eki Fernandez, Marco, and up top, Merentiel Cavani. I'm not going to lie, I wasn't too happy with the double nine, the striker, the two strikers up top, but it ended up working out pretty well. What did you think of the match as a whole?
I think we deserve to win quite clearly. I think they were probably very happy with the result given how the match played out. I think we really, really, really needed to get something from that game. That's not to say that we've got no chance. We've a very good chance. But I think, especially when you look back at that chance that Cavani had, where he was about 2 yards out,
multiple
really
chances.
Close to the goal. Multiple chances, yes. But I specifically had that one in my head right now.
Oh my God.
Where he just doesn't manage to get it in. It seems more difficult not to get it in the goal than it does to get it in the goal. And he just scuffs it. And,
and it only gets worse from here, right? Let me read off some stats. We had 56% possession. Expected goal, right? It's this new stat that everybody's looking at. We had an expected goal of 1.57 versus Palmeiras 0.43. We had 18 total shots, three big chances missed. Shots on target, we had 7. Unbelievable. Shots inside the box, 14. We had 14 shots inside the box, and we couldn't get the ball in the back of the net. Again, the way we played,
goals statistic is really damning.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I just said
that just tells the story.
Palmeiras won 2 back to back, obviously, Copa Libertadores titles, 2 titles in the last 3 years. This isn't a team that you can afford to let off the hook because, out of nowhere, and they warned us, I think they had their 2 best opportunities, were within the first 10 minutes. We were playing far better than them, and they warned us. Out of nowhere, they had 2 chances to score on us. And again, this is a team you can't let off the hook. In Brazil, it's going to be an intense game, and I'm sure they're going to be all over us looking for the winner. But yes, 7 shots on goal. Expected goal, 1.57. Expected goal in open play, 1.44. So we could, at the very least, have gone out with a 1-goal lead. 2-goal lead would have been magnificent, but Cavani had 3 chances on goal. Merentiel, I think, had 1 chance on goal. He whipped the ball that went out wide past the post. Brutal way to end the game. But like you said, it doesn't mean the tie is over by any means. In the 2000 Copa Libertadores, I think the first leg, Moneda against Palmeiras ended 2-2. And then we went in Brazil, and I think that was 0-0, 1-1. I can't remember off the top of my head, and we ended up winning in penalties. Again, that's a 23-year difference, right? The 2 teams and the competition as a whole is completely different. But I'm just trying to stress the fact that the tie isn't over by any means. Anybody specifically that you liked from our 11, Guy? Anybody that caught your eye?
Said that Paul Fernandes wasn't great, or hasn't, but I think he really stood up for himself and gave a good showing of himself. Let's put it that way. But since Alan Varela left to go to Porto, I think he's not been great. And this has been a game where you can say, yeah, he stood up in that 5 role.
Yeah, I agree. I loved Paul Fernandes on Thursday night. I think he was one of our better players out there. I'm going to highlight Eki Fernandes too, which I've been a fan of since his time at the reserves, his time over with Tigre. I'm just going to read a couple of statistics. He had 87 touches on the ball. Defensively is what really stood out to me. He won 2 out of 3 tackles, 1 clearance, 1 interception, 9 recoveries. Ground duels won 8 out of 10. Aerial duels won 2 out of 2. He was fouled 5 times and he only committed 1 foul. So a very, very solid performance from Eki Fernandes. And he also created 3 chances. So we spoke about this last week, that Medina is one of our few players who is constantly creating play for us. If he can get help from some of his teammates, then we're looking good. And that's exactly what happened on Thursday night. It wasn't only Medina creating opportunities. Eki Fernandes got into the mix as well, creating opportunities. He's the excellent player, both defensively and offensively. I think he had a really, really good match. And all these stats I'm getting from the FootMob app, which is my favorite app, they put him as the man of the match. Valentin Barco, talk to me about Barco, Guy. What did you think about Barco? I mean, it's just, we haven't really recorded in a while, but it's sort of redundant, especially on Twitter. It's redundant. Barco, every time he steps on the pitch, he has an excellent match.
Yeah, he's one of the few players that everyone who's not a Boca fan in Argentina hates, and that's always a good sign. He's a player you love to have on your team, but you really hate to face. And miss for us if he does end up leaving in January. I mean, I know he was outed in the winter window, the summer window in Europe, Man City amongst others. And if he does end up going to City, I think it's going to be unfortunate for us. But you can't wish him of a move like that. I think he's definitely, in a couple of years, going to be worthy of a place at Manchester City. Just so consistent and just always one of the top two, three players every time we play.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it any better myself. Barco, I mean, he's insane. Every time he touches the ball, something happens. He creates an opportunity. He had this one play where he's dribbling up the pitch on our own half, and he did a 360 and then was fouled. I'm like, oh my God, this kid is, what, 18 years old?
Yes.
He's 19 years old. I would never, at the age of 19, think of ever doing that. He's very
mature for his age. He's got no fear. He's got no fear at all. He doesn't care who he's playing against. He's going to play how he wants to play. And that's one of the best things, one of the best attributes you could have to be a Boca player.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Definitely agree. Another thing that I want to point out from Thursday night is defensively, we were solid. I remember texting the group chat. I don't know if you saw this message, but I basically said at some point in the second half that Chiquito Romero was just sitting there having some mates. He wasn't really involved in the game at all. Yes. Palmeiras didn't really test him too much. Again, they had two really good opportunities and within the first 5-10 minutes of the game, but that's about it. Chiquito Romero largely unbothered. Figal, Rojo did their job very well. They were solid defensively. Fabra, thank the Lord, he was solid defensively. Advíncula as well was solid and helped Medina going forward. Another thing that I want to point out is Cavani. His footwork is really, really good. I noticed that some of our best opportunities was when we needed an extra man in midfield, he would drop back, allow our players hold on to the ball, allow our players some time to move upfield and sort of disperse it either left or right. Cavani, and this is kind of going to sound like our Soldano days in 2020, where everybody commended Franco Soldano for just being an overall team player but not converting a lot of goals. I don't want to draw a comparison in any way, shape, or form, because Cavani is a natural-born goal scorer. Unfortunately, he hasn't been hitting the back of the net for us consistently. Hopefully, he gets there, but he does make a difference when he does touch the ball. That's pretty much it. That's all I have for Thursday. Guy, anything else you want to add?
Figal. Okay. Figal was someone we spoke about in the last podcast, in the last episode. We said, should we pick Valentini over him? Should we risk it? I think Fernandes, he was another player who we had a few doubts about, but actually proved themselves to be more than capable on the night. Obviously, Marcos Rojo is obviously always going to the biggest games for us. He's the captain, leader. But there were many more doubts about Figueroa, but he did really well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think Rojo and Figueroa both did very well. I think they're both not training alongside the squad at the moment. They're saving them for Thursday. It's not we're not completely certain that both of them will start on Thursday night in Brazil against Palmeiras. Thankfully, we have Valentini, who has been performing very well these last 6 months, who can step in for either one. So hopefully we have them both fit. If not, hopefully at least one is fit so Valentini can go in. But without further ado, let's continue. Let's move on to Sunday. I have no words, really. There was a lot of talk about the Super Clásico beforehand, the days leading up to the game. Boca obviously still in Copa Libertadores competition. River not in Copa Libertadores competition anymore. What should Almirón do? Should Almirón put in a mix, all substitutes, all starters? What should he do? I'm not sure if we discussed this last week, Guy. Really, I can't remember. But these, I mean, the Super Clásicos, you really can't ever just give them up and give them away as if they don't mean anything. Palmeiras, I'm trying to draw a comparison here. Palmeiras had, I think, 8 days of rest before the first leg against Boca. And as we just discussed during the first leg, they weren't really that fearful, scary Palmeiras side that we've been seeing over the past couple of years. They really didn't play well at all. And that was even said by their own coach. So from my point of view, I think the Super Clásico, we should have put a lot of starters. It's a game that could motivate us for the second leg. It's gives us bragging rights if we do well. I don't think Almirón's approach was really the correct one. I'll go ahead and sort of read out the lineup. We had Romero in goal, Wigan, Valdés, Valentini, Saracchi. In midfield, Campuzano, Blondel, Bujaude, Ramírez, Hanson, and Benedetto. A couple of key things that I want to just get off my chest right away. Valdés, the Paraguayan, Bruno Valdés, the Paraguayan defender, is terrible.
Dreadful.
He doesn't have what it takes to, I believe, play in first division in Argentina. He is an atrocious footballer. I put on Twitter that we got him on a free from his time in Mexico. I think they América in Mexico, he left them on a free. We signed him, and he's been very, very costly. Not everything that's free is good. He's been a costly defender. I want to highlight Blondel, basically playing in midfield as a right midfielder. Testing these sort of things on a Super Clásico really isn't ideal. This is now, I don't know, four or five coaches in a row that we've had that have just thought it was a good idea to test certain formations and certain players in certain areas that they've never played before. It's a Super Clásico. My point of view, you don't do that. Ramírez, another player who played, I think, four, five, six good games for us when we first signed him, and he's been dreadful ever since. Another player who continues to get playing opportunities when there's no merit behind them. He hasn't done anything to deserve to start a Super Clásico. I personally have done more to deserve to start on Sunday than Juan Ramírez has. So it's these sort of questions that had us scratching our heads, right? The 11 was released in the morning. The rumored 11 was sort of confirmed 2 hours before the game, and everybody said it. But this is atrocious. You shouldn't play Blondin in a position he's never played before. At least for us, he's never played before. And Ramírez has been atrocious ever since we signed him. And that's exactly what happened. We go down 1-0 at the 41st minute. And then what does Almirón do? He corrects his mistakes at halftime. He puts in Medina, Barco, and Eki Fernandez, which they seem to have an impact, at least the first couple of minutes in the second half. But then tables turned once again, and Rivas began dominating the game once again. I saw a comment on Twitter that, you know, I thought was a very nice observation that I also didn't really realize, but I picked up on it. Medina, Barco, and Eki Fernandez were sort of playing scared, not scared because of the rival, but scared because they didn't want to get hurt. They knew what was coming on Thursday. They obviously prioritized that game. They didn't want to get hurt. They don't want to miss the second leg against Palmeiras in semifinal Libertadores. You could say, well, the same thing could have happened if you started them. Yes, it's true. It's a difficult scenario. I don't know. Tell me your thoughts, Guy, on the Super Clásico.
Yeah, on that, was it a triple substitution at halftime?
Yeah, triple substitution.
He played his cards. They didn't go well for him, and he desperately tried to get something out of it. I think the first half was atrocious, to be honest. I think it was, the second half was, we clawed back a bit into the game. We looked like, around the time of the Cavani goal that got disallowed, we looked a bit better.
Yeah.
But, I've got some statistics here that I would like to read. We've won two games in the last 13, and we've gone six games without a win at La Bombonera. That's happened only once in the last 25 years.
Not good.
Games at home without winning. I mean, it happened in 2021. Happened in 2021, but that was without crowds because of COVID. So the first time in 25 years with crowds, obviously, that we've gone so many games without a home win. I just think questions have to be asked of Almirón. He's constantly playing around with the starting 11, trying things that you don't really, they're not really easy to see what he's going for, what he's trying to do. especially Blondel in the midfield. I mean, he's the outstanding fullback over the last month. I think he's had two goals and an assist or something like that in the last month. And just, it makes no sense. He's got things on a plate for him to put these players in the 11, but then puts them in positions that they haven't been playing. I just don't get it.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. And Ribéry ended up scoring a late goal in the second half, and it was in the 96th minute. The game was basically over. You saw the terrible blooper from Bruno Valdés, and a lot of people were asking, I mean, how many times does somebody have to play and give you poor performances until you drop them? Boca has this excellent defender in reserves. His name is Alcelmino, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He's had some minutes in with the first team. Hasn't played in quite a bit, but he does have some minutes under his belt with the first team. Players like that, right? You think to yourself, why ever play Valdés? Just put in Alcelmino, see how he does. It's a kid who grew up within the club, spent many years with the youth academy, the reserves, and now the first team, off and on between the first team and the reserves. Give this kid an opportunity. The few chances he's had with the first team, he's played very, very well. At the reserve level, he's played phenomenal. What's the worst thing that could happen?
Yes, and if you don't mind, I'd like to just say...
Go ahead.
I think I was at... I watched. He came on off the bench, and he was applauded by everyone. He was the player that everyone. He seemed to be the player of the match. Let's just put it that way. I think it was against Huracán, perhaps in May or June, that he came off the bench and made his debut, professional debut for Boca.
Yeah.
And he was like the revelation of the.
He was so good. He was so good.
It just doesn't make sense.
So you kind of start seeing like these repetitive things, and why isn't the coach realizing it? And we have seen this with previous coaches, Miguel Ángel Russo. With some of his things, and then Ibarra and Bataglia, who are two legends of the club. I don't want to talk down on them. And now Almirón again, it's these sort of questions as in, like, why do you keep doing this? Like, you see it's not working. It's clearly not working. So scrap it. Why would you play on Blondel as a midfielder on the right? Wigan, another player that I want to touch on, just so poor. I don't know. I think he deserves another loan if the team offers to purchase him. If the offer is good enough, I think it's time to let him go. Boca has been too kind to players that just really aren't deserving of it. Wigan is one. Unfortunately, I'm the biggest supporter of our youth players who come up through our youth system. But I think Wigan's time is up with the club. Bruno Valdés, I don't even want to touch on. I've said enough. His contract should have been terminated as soon as the game ended. Juan Ramirez, another one whose contract should have been terminated. It's okay to get things wrong, right? It's okay to sign a player and say, hey, we messed up. He hasn't planned out to be or panned out to be what we expected of him. It's okay. It's okay. Drop them. They're not helping. And we have options. Benedetto, I think, played a fairly good Superclásico. You could even see it at one point. He was getting so frustrated with his teammates in the first half, because the commentators were saying it just doesn't seem like his teammates are really, really in the game. Benedetto loves playing Superclásicos, as we can tell. I mean, he has such a history against River, if you want to label it good or bad, whatever, that's on you. I don't know. It was right. You should never lose a Superclásico, at least, at the very least, not at home. You can't lose 2-0 to River at home before the second leg of Libertadores semifinal. Obviously, yes. We all prioritize the match against Palmeiras, but you cannot lose a Superclásico at home. You just can't do it. And these players just really have to realize that. Valentini played an excellent game, very, very well. Hanson, off and on, didn't really make too much of an impact. Bujal, same thing, only played 46 minutes. He was poor. He wasn't good. I think for 70 minutes of the game, River definitely did outplay us. Even more, 75 minutes as a whole. And then you have, you know, some fans who were very upset with the officiating decisions. River's first goal, there was an elbow against Wigan. Should have been called a foul. I don't know how far in advance the foul Wigan was to the goal. I don't know if it was 20 seconds, 10 seconds, 15, 45 seconds. I genuinely don't know. Cavani's goal, I haven't seen a clear-cut frame image showing him offside when the ball is just leaving the player's boot. The image circling everywhere, you just don't see the ball leaving the cleat, right? The boot. It's covered by whatever River player was defending that play. So,
yeah,
for those people,
and in that circumstance, interrupt again. In that circumstance, I think it's not just happening in Argentina. I think it's really happening in the Premier League as well here in England, where the margins are so fine on offside. I think what eventually is going to happen is they're going to have to rethink their offside rule, and perhaps something like if your foot's onside, you're onside, because really the margins are so small that the advantage, supposed advantage being gained by that fractional offside, but
it's nothing.
Shoulder, it's your nose is offside, your eyebrows are offside. I mean, what advantage are you gaining by your eyebrow being offside? It's nothing.
It was a frustrating call. I'm not going to get into it, whether it was the right call or not. It was extremely frustrating. That could have changed the game completely. It was an absolute golazo from Cavani. Golazo. I was expecting him to jump on the fence and do the Manteca Martina celebration. Oh, my God.
I think we all want that, don't we?
We all wanted it. We all wanted it. It's a shame.
Him shaking on the alambrado. Yeah.
Just bringing down with the fans climbing up the alambrado from the other side, and everybody just going, as they say in the UK, absolutely mental. Oh my God, I lost it. Very, very, very unlucky call. It is what it is. But that 1-1 would have changed the trajectory of the game. I'm sure of it. Leon Bonilla was already pumping throughout 90 minutes. It would have been an explosion of emotions. And who knows, we even could have gotten a late winner. We still could have conceded and lost 2-1, or the game just ended up 1-1 in a draw. I don't know. But it is what it is. Very, very poor approach overall by Almiron. We lost because of Almiron. He gifted 45 minutes, my point of view. And, you know, we need to do better from our coaching perspective. Any last thoughts on the Superclásico guy?
Benedetto, again, I just think there was two or three chances. That chance where he tries to go around Armani, I just think, come on. You've got enough in the tank to chip that. I mean, Benedetto, before he went to Marseille, would have chipped that. And I know he's not the same player that he was back then, but, you know, he would have perhaps been much more clinical a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I agree. He should have chipped that. I don't know if that ended up being called offside or not. I'm really not sure.
No, I don't remember.
I don't think so.
There was contention. It was a contentious decision whether it was a penalty or not, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was a penalty, but...
No. I didn't think it was a penalty either. I thought it was the right call, but yeah, I agree. He had enough to chip the goalkeeper. Again, I don't remember if it was offside or not. I really don't. But he had enough time to chip it. All right, let's move on to the last part of the podcast. We'll spend a few minutes on this. It's just previewing the second leg against Palmeiras. The one thing I want to get... I definitely do want to mention, I don't know if you know, Guy, but Palmeiras Arena, their pitch is a synthetic pitch.
Yeah, Sergio Romero spoke about it, I think.
Right. And there's a lot of talk about this. Palmeiras obviously uses that to their advantage. They train on that pitch. They play on that pitch week in, week out. They're used to it, and away teams find it very difficult to play on that pitch. From what I've read and from what I've heard, Boca requested one training session on that pitch. Palmeiras said no. They denied it. I don't know what the rules are behind that. I don't know if they're allowed to deny it. I don't know if they have to give the opposing team at least one training on that pitch. From what I remember, for Copa Libertadores nights, I don't know why. I always remember the away team the night before the match at La Bombonera always getting a training session in.
Yes, like a closed Bonera. Training session or something.
Right. Just to get a feel for the pitch. I don't know. I thought it was an obligation from CONMEBOL. I don't know exactly how that works, but it's definitely something to keep in mind. We're in store for a very, very, very tough encounter against Palmeiras. I don't think it's going to be anything like the first leg. I think Palmeiras is going to come out guns blazing. Let's talk about the expected lineup. Would you repeat the same 11 from the first leg? Would you alter it a little bit? What would you do?
I think it is going to be the same lineup. I'm not sure if I would go for the same lineup. Merentiel, I'm not sure. The two nines, we've established already on previous podcasts, I don't like it.
It did work in the first leg, though. I liked it. It worked.
It did work. It did work. But I don't know. I just always feel like it, apart from the fact that it worked in the first leg, it always leaves the strikers isolated because there's not enough midfield bodies.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of the lineup is going to have to do with Rojo and Figal, right? If they're fit to play. Let's play as if they're fit to play. I think Almirón is going to play a 5-4-1. I think Merentiel is going to come out. I think Valentini is going to go in. And Fabra and Advíncula are sort of going to have that role on the side to sort of move up into midfield when we're attacking and come back down. So we're going to have a defensive line of three men when we're attacking and of five men when we're defending. I think the midfield is going to be the same with Medina, Paul, Eki, and Barco. And I think we're just going to have Cavani up top. That's my guess of how Almirón is going to approach this game. Again, that's if Figal and Rojo are fit to play. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that probably sounds better than the first leg. And obviously, given the circumstances, I know we're playing away. Yes, and it's going to be much more strenuous for us. I think also Figal and Rojo, if they've got knocks, they're going to play anyway, aren't they? I think unless they physically cannot play, they're going to play.
Yeah,
that's dead set.
Especially Rojo.
Yes.
Especially Rojo. Boca away in the Copa Libertadores. Against Racing, we were poor. Against Nacional, we were poor. Both games, we set up very defensively. We weren't offensive at all. We didn't attempt to even score. I mean, if we're sort of going to look at those two games, we could sort of predict what's going to happen in Brazil. We're going to set up defensively again. It's going to be brutal 90 minutes. Hoping we don't concede and maybe drag the tie into penalties. I don't think that was ever Almirón's approach going into the games against Racing and Nacional, thinking about penalties. I don't think any coach really or manager really sets up to play like that, I would hope. But I do think we are going to set up very defensively. I don't think we're going to be as committed offensively as we were in the first leg. That's just my personal opinion. I think that's it. Guy, is there anything else you'd like to add to this episode? Otherwise, we'll close it out.
I would just touch on the annual table, looking at where we are in comparison to the other teams and the Libertadores qualification. This is interesting because we're 2 points behind Defensa. We're on 51, they're on 53, on what we've got so far of the whole year's points tally. But this is exactly the same in the Copa de la Liga tournament that we're playing right now. They're fourth, which is the final qualifying place for the next round, and we're 2 points behind them in that as well. So that's, I don't know what you think about that. If we've got a good chance of qualifying or...
Yeah, I mean...
I think we have.
Yeah. No, we definitely have. There's still a lot of... games to play domestically. How far in are we in the Copa del Rey? How many games have we played? I don't even know. Let me take a quick look. We've played at least 10 games, no? 7, 6, 8 games, something like that?
I think 8 or 9 now, I'm not sure.
7 games.
Feels like more.
Yeah, it does feel like more. We're Group B. We're sitting 10th out of 14, very poor. So we're pretty much halfway through the group stage. there's still some time left. There's still at least six games left to play. We obviously have two other routes of getting into the Libertadores if we don't get through in the Copa de la Liga, and that's the Copa Argentina and the Copa Libertadores. Obviously, I do still think we get through. I can't imagine if 2024 Boca in the Sudamericana or really without international football, that would be very, very bad for the club. I do think we get in one way or another. I think the easiest way is through the Libertadores because there's only 180 minutes left to play if we make it to the final. But we have to get in. I just don't see us not getting in. There's so many opportunities. It's not like back in the day in the early 2000s where it was a lot tougher to get in. Now you have the Copa Argentina added to that. I don't see us not playing international football next year. Hopefully we have a positive outcome on Thursday afternoon, and we play the final and hopefully have a positive outcome then, and then we're able to progress via Copa Libertadores, because that would also add us a seventh club title. But I definitely do think we get it.
I really hope so. I would absolutely love it. I've got my hands in, I've got my head in my hands right now, just thinking about it. Come on.
It's just two games. That's all it is. It's just two games, 180 minutes. Just win the next two Copa Libertadores games, and everybody's going to be happy. That's all we want. Don't make it into the playoff and the Copa de la Liga. Could care less. Win the next two Copa Libertadores games, and I'm going to be very happy. I still remember I was 12 last time we won the Copa Libertadores. I'm 28 now. I was 12. I remember that night watching it with my mom, my grandmother, and my brother when I used to live in Florida. I still remember that day. I'll never forget it. Just win the next two Copa Libertadores games. I get excited just talking about it. Just win the next two Copa Libertadores games. I think before we close this out, do you want to give me a prediction for Thursday?
When you touched on how defensive we may play, I think it's either going to go two ways. It's either going to go 0-0 penalties, or if the worst would happen that Palmeiras scored early, I think we could end up drawing 2-all, 3-3, something like that. But I think 0-0 on penalties. I just think Boca thing ever to go through three rounds on penalties.
On penalties. And then win the final on penalties.
It would annoy everyone of every other fan base, and I just love it.
I would love it too. I think 1-1, and then we go through on penalties.
Okay, yeah, that could also.
I think we score first. I think Boca scores first, and then Palmeiras equalize. 70 something minute, and then we go on penalties. All right, my friend. I think that's it. Anything else you want to touch on before we close this one out?
No, I don't think so. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Guy, thank you so much. I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you for joining me. To our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in, and until next time.